Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So Faster, freedom.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for August 29th, 2023. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find our show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box to sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside Case Lowe, as always. And Case, feels kind of like, in the greater scheme of things, like Dragon Gate right now, like, I don't know. How are you doing wrestling-wise? It'll be like this has been kind of a fever dream, I feel like, over the last, like, 6 weeks that just kind of came to a head on Sunday.
With wrestling as a whole?
Yeah. I mean, how are you holding up? I know you just got to see a Torneo Cibernetico. I know that might spike your blood sugar. I'm just making sure you're okay.
That's the funny thing is I'm in a position in my wrestling fandom where I'm saying, thank God for Lucha. You know, I really enjoy CMLL, and I subscribe to their YouTube channel, their paid gimmick now. I watched Mystico versus Hiromu live on Sunday night. And if you haven't seen that match, it is not a balls to the walls great match they're capable of. It's a super character heavy match, which I thought was incredibly entertaining. I went 4 stars on that. And then, like you were just alluding to right before we started recording, I watched the CMLL Grand Prix Cybernetico match from this year. And that is the best CMLL match I've watched all year. 4.5 stars, which is right where they have sort of topped out for me. I don't know. It's a stress-free promotion. I watched the, you know, typically the last 3 or 4 matches on Arena Mexico show, and then anything from the Puebla show that looks interesting. And I really, really enjoy it. Whereas AEW is a wash. All Out is happening in my backyard. I had a free ticket to All Out, and I let the guy know that I was supposed to go with this week. Like, I think I'm good. I don't think I'm going to go to that. Ring of Honor, waste of time. New Japan, I can check in on because the hits are very high, but they miss every once in a while, and I don't care for, you know. Let me put it this way. New Japan, I really like some stuff, and I really don't care about some stuff. Noah is Noah. No, thank you. All Japan is whatever. And Dragon Gate continues to be a promotion that I don't think is very exciting, but is also not bad. And in the current context of the wrestling world, I will take not bad over much of what is available.
Yeah, I need to hunt down the Torneo Cibernético. That is, Case, actually my favorite match stipulation. I think it's one of the more unique and cool things that Grand Prix each year. I just think that it's something that, sadly, like I learned about it from Chikara, whereas I feel like that's how most non-endemic Lucha fans discovered the Torneo Cibernético. But
yeah, it's funny. I thought that watching it was like, God, I wish somebody else did this other than Quackenbush. What a cool concept. Both the concept of the Grand Prix, which I guess TNA kicked around for a little bit, but, you know, it was TNA. And, you know, that match style, again, it's really only been done by Chikara. I don't think, like, even at the height of Shima and his wacky gimmick matches in Dragon Gate, I don't think Dragon Gate ever did one.
No, I mean, they found a way to completely reinvent the wheel in another fashion with, like, Loser Revives, Nanawa Rules, Secret Captain, Elimination Falls match. You know, like, it got to that point. But I think, like, the brilliant thing about, like, the Grand Prix, at least CMLLs, is they always set it up to be CMLL versus the world. And with the Torneo Cibernético format, you always have one winner that way. And it's just like, oh, that makes perfect sense for, like, a one-night big event. Do your World Cup kind of gimmick. You do it that way. And it's something that, like, yeah, no, like, you would almost think during, like, peak Junction 3 versus Blood Warriors Case that they surely did a Cibernético. No, to my knowledge, the Dragon System has never done a Torneo Cibernético. It might have happened in Mexico under, like, a Toriyama in Mexico show where, like, a Dragon Mania, I know, has had Cibernéticos, but not the mainline Dragon System, to my knowledge.
I'm not going to look it up because it ultimately doesn't matter, but I think the T2P guys did a Cibernético really early on in their career, and it's one of those.
I thought
where
it was in Mexico.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Is I think there's like an early Toriyama Mexico show from the T2P class where they do that, and you know we maybe have 4 minutes of the 36 minutes or whatever, but you know watching that to sort of tie this into Dragon Gate. As we also approach the end of the year and I start thinking about the SFM 50, the 50 best wrestlers in the world, Rocky Romero, who is 40 years old, TJ Perkins, who is 38 years old, and Yasushi Kanda, who just turned 45 years old, all will be in my top 50, all arguably having the best years of their career. I am all for youth. I am all for new. I am all for pushing forward. I love that these old dudes are having the years they're having.
Yeah, and it's something I feel like that when you see like Rocky Romero, he's had this run in Mexico where he's been allowed to kind of finally like spread his wings and show himself as a frontline Rudo, which is so fascinating. TJP, like as someone who like bounces around the world, it just seems like between how Catch 2-2 went for him and then also whenever he shows up in CMLL, he always it always fits in a way.
He comes across so good in CMLL, and I love what he does in New Japan. I mean, look, TJP is a turd. The guy, I don't want to be around the guy. I don't want to be the guy's friend. But he was far too talented to be doing as little as he was for as long as he was. And I would love to know the alternate timeline, the alternate universe, where he gets booked in Dragon Gate at the start of Dragon Gate USA to see what that relationship would have looked like. But as we talked about when we did the Rewind and Rewatch series for DGUSA, Gabe told him that Gabe didn't think he was talented enough to work in Japan. Dragon Gate wasn't interested, and that severed their relationship. But I don't know. I watched that era of 2JP, and I watched that era of Dragon Gate, and I thought there was a natural fit there. But you know, he's great in New Japan. I think he's even better in CMLL. And real quick, before I let you finish your point, there were years past where I made a point to watch every Rocky Romero match that made tape. You will not find a bigger Forever Hooligans fan than myself, a huge Roppongi Vice fan as well. I think Rocky is a hidden gem. And late era Rocky, you know, post Rottweilers, let's say, has always been a guy that I've really enjoyed. I did not think he had high-end match of the year type stuff left in the tank, but CMLL 2023 has changed my mind, so good on him.
Yeah, I was kind of coming to the end of my point. It's just like the idea that when you bring it to Yasushi Kanda was the last one to talk about. It was more that doing tag team work, something he really has not done, at least since his return in 2006. you know, so it's a way of like reinventing the wheel that I find really kind of fascinating. And it's something that, yeah, as we kind of shift into like Dragon Gate mode, it is something where this week on the program, it's one of those times that I think we could sum up this last week in Dragon Gate in one way, that Dragon Gate is looking straight ahead to September 7th, Cork and Hall, and they have the blinders on. Nothing else. They're not going to react to anything else right now. It's just September 7th, and that's really what we kind of got this week.
Yes, the impending Cork and Hall show, the debut of Takuma Nishikawa in Japan. We'll talk about that in a minute, but Mike and I wanted to start off this show going Dragon Gate adjacent, going to our friends at the Ledet Corporation and talking about Gleets.
Yeah, so on the 23rd, there was a joint show with Gleet, with All Japan. It was Gleet version and Gleet Cross All Japan Pro Wrestling Life is a Challenge, with a lot of various Gleet versus All Japan matchups. But what became more noticeable was what happened after the main event. They did a crossover generations match with Kaz Hayashi and T-Hawk representing Gleet, Suwama, Kento Miyahara, and then on the other side, Hayato Tomura, Tetsuya Izuchi, Yuma Anzai, and Atsuki Ayagi. But after the match, right as T-Hawk was about to do the show close promo, the lights went dead, and we got a video from Mexico. And after said video, we saw the debuts of SB Kento and Takuma as they entered Corken Hall with their title belts. Takuma did a flip. They cut a promo, and at least on their upcoming, I believe it's also going to be in Corken Hall, that match, right?
Yes, yeah, it is.
Yeah, and they announced that it will be El Lindemann and Hayato Tomura who are the two who kind of stepped up to them, other than T-Hawk. T-Hawk, who just looked like he's looked like he's wanted to punch someone in the face for like the last 12 months, I feel like, and it's actually pretty great. But so it's going to be Hayato Tomura and El Lindemann teaming up against Kento and Takuma in their Gleet debut.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. I have thoughts from somebody within Dragon Gate who I talked to about this earlier this week. I'll share those in a second to sort of know where the company stands to some degree. I watched this entire show, so I have thoughts on not only the invasion, but Gleet as a whole. But I'll kick it to you first. Takuma, SB Kento in Gleet, your first impressions, what did you make of it?
It was trying to be pretty measured. So I saw the announcement and I was going to watch the show to begin with, and I kind of staggered my watching of it. And getting to the Mexa Happy Locos, it's something where like the debut in a lot of ways, beat for beat, Crib the Millennials video from Mexico announcing their debut and then coming out. It was something where there was a reaction, but it was not the kind of reaction that I think they were hoping for out of the audience. Like there was a response, like that's undeniable, but for like this kind of invader, like what would be seen somewhat as a jump in some quarters, it was kind of subdued, I thought. And I just kind of at a certain point with it, just like personally, I was just like, oh really, okay. And we'll see how it goes long term, I guess is what I'll say about that. At least like personally, like watching it, I had like a feeling, not necessarily of like depression or sadness, just like ill ease watching this. I was like, I just don't know long term about this.
I groaned. It was one of those deals. And look, you and I are hard on Gleet, but I think we are incredibly fair. And I think we're going to be incredibly hard on them right now. And I think we're going to be fair. And if at any point, when anybody's listening and they think we're not being fair, open the Voice Gate channel on the Voice of Wrestling Discord, because I really am not doing anything that I do, or not saying anything rather, that I think is out of line when it comes to this promotion. I groaned when I saw that they were there, because the Ishida jump last year felt hot. And the first show with Ishida felt pretty special. You want to go back on the timeline, Sakamoto showing up in Gleet. Okay, he was a freelance Dragon Gate guy, certainly never repped the promotion to any degree other than it being his primary place of business. But, you know, if I was running a promotion, I would want Kazuma Sakamoto on my roster. That was a good get. You know, that felt like, all right, you know, they got one. Even going back to the beginning of the promotion when Strong Hearts first showed up, by the point that Gleet had come to exist, it felt like the hotness of Strong Hearts in Japan was on the down low and that they had lost some of the momentum that they had from Wrestle 1 and DDT. But it was like, all right, well, you know, it's a Shima promotion in Japan. We'll see what they can do. It's just the dominoes continue to fall of X Dragon Gate guy. And Kento and Takuma showed up. And it was like, oh my God, we're doing this again. And that's not even to mention Yoshino, who we'll get into in a minute. I've got a note on Yoshino here. But I don't know how two guys that are under the age of 25 seemingly overnight now look 35 years old and like a hard 35. But that Takuma. Was my first takeaway was
Takuma. Wow.
Why do these guys look so bad? And that's not to sound petty. Again, I don't care ultimately. And I'll reemphasize this, I think, a few different times. I want Gleet to be good. And I want what's best for every wrestler today, especially in Japan, when there's very little money in Japan. I want these guys to succeed. Why do they look so old all of a sudden?
Yeah, Takuma was the one that I guess, like, for me, like, you bring up, like, that this has been, like, a constant refrain that it would be disaffected former Dragon Gate wrestlers for various reasons leaving the promotion end up here. And at a certain point, it is... I would wonder with the way that they've drawn and the bloom is deadly off the rose with Strong Hearts. Like it was off the rose before Gleet happened. And it is something that good for them, you know, as you're saying, like everyone getting as much work as possible. But at a certain point, this was like one of the first times in their career where I felt like, Kento Kabune and Takuma Fujiwara did not feel like stars. Like that was.
I would concur with that. I think that's completely right because you know you look at their entrance and Takuma basically did the Charlotte Flair. He just did a cartwheel back handspring for the sake of doing one during his entrance. I remember when Charlotte first went to NXT, she would do the cartwheel before she got in the ring. I don't know, maybe she still does. And I haven't watched a Charlotte match in many, many years. But it's like, okay, well, he's athletic. I'll give him that. And then Kento came out. And you got a very brief, very subdued SB Kento chant, and then nothing. I mean, I don't know a person that enjoyed that segment. I thought it died a complete and utter death. And that is through me watching the promo a few different times, trying to look for various things, getting a translation of the promo, and you know, having a general understanding of what's going on. Not a good segment. It was really, I mean, I said when SB Kento debuted his first match, I said, well, this guy's a superstar. You know, he had that charisma that made me pay attention to him no matter what he was doing. Takuma, it took a few matches, but he got there because he was so exciting. The charisma was zapped from them here. I mean, this felt like, and I'll steal a phrase from somebody I talked to earlier this week, it felt like Wish.com Strong Hearts. They did the whole thing where we're leaving Japan, we're going to Mexico, this is our new life. And then they go back to Japan. And the second time around, it's just not as exciting. It is not the same as it once was.
Yeah, and I think the fact that, like, trying to think of how I'm going to phrase this, keeping with how we've phrased things about the situation before, I am personally happy that Kento and Takuma are able to find work, like, of course, like that. And that this being the option, I think that it's not going to pay off for them long term. Or like if you're looking at least from like my perspective for like long term stability for them, I don't know this is the play. And if there is I have yet to talk to people around the promotion explicitly about this, but if there was a path back for Kento and Takuma, I don't think that path exists at that moment right now. Like it's something where like that, I guess I had an idea in my head, maybe, case, and I could be completely off off base about this, that maybe a couple of years, like they go, they get the opportunity to explore, do Lucha, go travel, work the world. And then after a couple of years, there might have been a door back open for that. I just, at least for me, like selfishly, I would have rather seen that versus this, where I could just in my mind think about what the next 5 years look for them. And I don't know if it's the right choice. I cannot sit here and say like, well, they made the best like long-term choice for them. I don't think that's true.
Mike, what you're expressing is not headcanon. Jay, on this very podcast in July, said the same thing, that for a variety of reasons, they had to let him go. You know, this was not a situation where Drangate could keep them employed after the situation that occurred, most of which has been reported, some of which hasn't. They had to let them go, but it was, you know, it was a breakup, but it was a soft breakup. It felt different than Ishida. It felt different than Sakamoto. It obviously felt different than Strong Hearts, where, you know, you're no longer together. You're seeing other people, but it's not like the number was deleted from the phone. You know, if you need to get in contact, the person was going to be there on the other end of the line. I can speak to this from the reporting that I did when we were first tipped off to Kento and Takuma leaving the promotion back in May. And we had this before anybody. We were not the first to report it because of a variety of logistical reasons, but we knew about this going back to May. I was told from the jump by multiple people, their play is Mexico. They want to live there. They want to wrestle there. They want to do their thing there. They live in Mexico City, and I think that is worth noting as well. They showed up in Gleet and then got on a plane and went back to Mexico. These are still Mexican-based wrestlers that are doing a quote-unquote invasion angle. The difference, the wrinkle in what has transpired from what I heard initially to what has taken place now, and this is pure speculation, is that Ledet opened up the checkbook. You know, the way that Jay spoke about them in July, and then the way that I talked to somebody in the promotion this week, the tone is very different. I think this caught them off guard. Drangate, that is. I think they were very put off by this. And I think a door that was slightly ajar down the line is a door that has been slammed shut completely. I don't know what happens of Gleet a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, but I think this is a play that has very poor long-term ramifications, because as long as Gleet continues to exist, you know, I don't look at them as a major player. They'll bring back Yoshino and draw, I don't know, 1,400 fans, and then they've got to do it again the next month, and they've got to find another person to bring in, and another person to bring in, and another person to bring in. We'll talk about one of their homegrown stars who I think is a burgeoning superstar who they clearly see no value in. The long-term game for this promotion is that they're an all-star game, that they're bringing in whoever they can bring in as a free agent. Maybe they reunite Speed Muscle and they draw 2,000 fans to Tokyo Dome City Hall. And then the next month, what are they doing? It is a promotion continuously where I am left going, what are they doing? And Kento and Takuma now are just two more confusing chess pieces to add to this very confusing game.
Yeah, and it's something where you talk about like the checkbooks, and you still have to like look at this promotion as a way that it's just almost like content creation, because there's just like, other than like merch sales, which I mean, there's no way to like really know numbers, but you could usually see merch in the crowd. Do you see much Gleet merch in the crowd ever when you're watching one of these shows?
I don't look for it, but it doesn't sound like something that I see a lot of.
So it's like, they're not drawing, like, as you like laid out perfectly. So, I mean, there's no continuity. There's no building storylines. Like, I guess somehow T-Hawk will defend the belt against someone else and it will draw 700 people. Like, that's probably what it will do, because there's no continuity there. And all it does, I feel like, at least for Kento and Takuma, it just lets them work in Japan when they probably were not able to. And is that going to be worth it for them down the line? That's why I wonder, really.
So can I throw some things at you that somebody from Drangate talked to me about earlier this week?
Please do.
So they mentioned three different points. I'll go through them one by one. I'll get your thoughts on each of them. One, and this is something I obviously cannot confirm or deny because I do not speak Japanese, but this person does. They work for Dragon Gate. Masato Yoshino on commentary was selling that he has never seen Kento and Takuma wrestle before, despite the fact that he wrestled SB Kento multiple times before he retired. Your thoughts on that?
That's it was something that, like, I did, like, play the mental math in my head for all these, and basically the conclusion I came to is that it's just unlikely that, like, Strong Hearts would have had any sort of interaction other than, you know, just throughout the community. But Yoshino saying that just was one of those things that I for what we assume the majority of the fans are in this promotion, and we can kind of tell what they are because we've seen what does not draw when they try to in this promotion. It's you're lying to your viewers, and because they're more likely than not were either disaffected Dragon System fans or people that were wanting to still support T-Hawk and Linda or whatever you want to put it, and they would absolutely know that SB Kento debuted in 2019.
Yeah, debuted in 2019, was in the RED versus Toriumon Generation Unit Disbands match, which Yoshino was in as well. They wrestled at Gate of Destiny 2020. Whole lot of interaction between those two there. So, you know, the way this person described it to me was, quote, absolutely pathetic that Yoshino was trying to do that. Another point this person made, the big building in Nagoya, the Nagoya Congress Center that Dragon Gate draws very well in, famously, SB Kento and UT outdrew a big Noah show in that building during the pandemic. We talked about this a few weeks ago. That building is closing for renovations next year. So if Kento and Takuma become, let's say, full-time roster members in Gleed, and this is a promotion that does not run very many shows to begin with, but let's say they become full-time roster members, they have no chance of maximizing Kento's popularity in his hometown. They run a very small building in Nagoya. Last time they were in there, they did 295 fans. For reference, even during points of the pandemic, Dragon Gate was coming close to 1,000 fans at the Nagoya Congress Center, and that is at the peak of seating restrictions, etc. So if you make the argument of, like, hey, you know, Kento can expand business, he has a ton of sponsors in Nagoya, wouldn't this be a great thing for our promotion to be able to have a ton of sponsors in Nagoya? Well, they've shot themselves in the foot because the big building will be unavailable, you know, by the next time Gleek can run it, basically.
So a couple points here. If you are someone that just does not really follow Dragon System, you like listen to the show, because I know there is a portion of listenership that way. If you want to have like a frame of context, I am right now looking at the Ledet schedule through the end of November, and they're essentially running once a week. They're doing about, they have four shows in September. They have one show and only one show in September, actually. And then they have four shows in November. They don't run very often. As Kay said, Diamond Hall is...
How many, is it four shows in September, one in October?
One in October, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So if you're trying to use this as a way to bring people into shows, that's going to be difficult because you only run, they're only running Nagoya once over this time period. The Diamond Hall, they're running it on the 24th of September. Secondarily, one big thing I think is special about Glate is the fact that, Case, what do they not have on their mats or anywhere else in the building when you watch a Glate show that every other promotion in Japan has?
I'm assuming that would be sponsors.
Yeah, I wonder, sponsors, exactly. I wonder if it's going to be something that, like, it was kind of like a running joke how many various stickers and sponsor patches SBK had on his jacket in Nagoya. I wonder if there's, like, some sort of thing where, like, you're not necessarily, like, they're not advertising for, like, that. So it's not even, like, a best utility case if that's true. I don't know. I'm just reading and assuming. And it's something that, like, even with this, like, they are not flying, so there would be at best working 11 shows, and you brought up the fact that they aren't full-time, that they aren't likely to do this, so each time they're going to try to book them for, like, that Nagoya building that they draw 250 in, they're going to pay for a plane flight for the two of them, so two plane flights, and last time I checked, the yen is running at 147 to a dollar. It usually is right around about a yen a cent. So it's a very expensive way to try to build that, to try to build your Nagoya market, if that's their method.
Yeah, that, you know, something I've really never thought about until now. Gleed has never run Kobe before. They have no footprint in Kobe, despite all of the years of, I guess they were more Okamura sponsor than Shima sponsors, but, you know, Kobe Sambo Hall was so packed for so many years because of the businessmen that would attend those shows that had ties and money tied into the promotion. And even in Osaka, you know, they had the big house at the start of the year in Osaka number 2 for Ishida versus Lindemann. They had 500 people there, which at the time, that was the most people you could put in that building. That was the very end of any sort of seating restrictions there. But other than that, they run a really small building in Osaka, and that's Shima's hometown. I mean, that is his market, and they really don't seem to make any inroads there either. And I don't know enough about the nuances of sponsorships as it relates to Japanese wrestling to have any comments on that other than just the observation that the two markets that you would think a Dragon Gate offshoot would be able to dominate, Kobe and Osaka, they have very little, if no, inroads there.
Yeah, so they do run Osaka pretty, like, they don't run Edeon very much. They run Stella all the
time. Yes, the tiny one there. I mean, that's like 300 fans.
Right. So you have that, looking at their schedule, they have that one Nagoya. They're going up to Sapporo to the soccer arena for one show.
That's the crazy thing. I mean, and look, this is the difference between a corporate-backed promotion and an indie like Dragon Gate. To make that financially worthwhile for Dragon Gate, and they only do it because they have stars in BB Hulk and KZ who are from Hokkaido, they have to run the triple shot there. Gleet is a one-and-done shot, you know, 245 fans. All right, let's pack up the truck and go back, which just seems crazy to me.
Right, and the other side about it with Dragon Gate is that they do the fan trips up to Sapporo, which is another way for them to be able to pull that off, because you have people that are going to show up for those shows and they're going to be paying for whatever the rate you're going to tack on top of like their transit, you know? So like, that's the other way of doing that. Like, there is like no like thing with that with Ledet. And it's one of those things that like, I look at, like, I only took notes for the Lindemann versus Rising Hayato in the main event. I did kind of skip around. I'm not watching that G Affinity match case. I've been through this road.
I did.
Buddy, that was 14 minutes. You could have, like, I don't know, taken a nap.
I don't know. Minutes of sleep. I don't know which of the Saito brother is which. I know there's one Saito brother that looks like absolute shit, and then there's one that I think is like fine. But that match felt like 14 minutes. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, but it's something where, like, we've now seen this where, like, they essentially partner with these promotions to kind of fill up their back half of these shows. And at the end of the day, Hayato was more over than Lindemann during that match case. I think that's kind of fair to say.
Yes, but my belief from some people that I've talked to is that Hayato Tamura is the one guy there that has some sort of momentum.
I was talking about Rising Hayato.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Lindemann was in the junior title match. I was thinking T-Hawk for a second. Yes, Hayato was more over than Lindemann was.
And then in the main event, this was like that mixed one that did have Hayato Tamura in it, who was the most over guy on the Gleet side. But he was probably fourth or fifth most over, because you had Kento Miyahara, Suwama, and Itsuki Aoyagi, who are more over than them. So you're bringing these people into these promotions and they're having all right matches, but you're kind of like taking a step back and you're wondering, what purpose does this serve?
Okay, so that's sort of where I want to go with this, because I still have a lot of thoughts on Kento and Takuma that I want to get to, but I watched this entire show, and anybody that's listened to this podcast knows that I have a lot of thoughts on Gleet, meaning that, you know, I really like Jun Tancho and I really like Soma Watanabe, and I think they have something in Czech Shimatani, even though they don't seem to think so. And then I watched this main event, this All Japan Gleet collab show that I'm baffled by to begin with. It's an eight-man tag match that I went notebook on. I went 4.25 on this match. I thought it was very good. But to me, the absolute best part of this match, without question, was the interactions between Kento Miyahara and Tetsuya Iizuki. And there is no point in our lifetime I will be happy to steal a bet, a wager from Rob McCarron of Shake Them Ropes many, many years ago. If Tetsuya Suzuki ever beats Kento Miyahara clean, I will eat a hat on this show. There is no chance that is ever happening. So you just have a relationship that I guess bolsters T-Hawk's credit to some degree, maybe Hayato Tomura if you're being incredibly generous. And then you just have all these other guys that exist there. And when I think about the future of Kento and Takuma in this promotion, it is a continuous just question mark of what are these guys going to do? I put together a list of what I think the relevant Kento and Takuma matches would be. Would you like to hear them and add any that I could possibly miss?
Okay, go ahead.
So they are doing, Kento and Takuma versus Tamura and Lindemann on October 9th. After that, I think the relevant matches you could do would be those two versus T-Hawk and Lindemann, those two and Ishida versus Shima, T-Hawk, and Lindemann, those two, Ishida, Kazumasaka, and Kazuma Sakamoto versus some combination of Strong Hearts, Shima, T-Hawk, Lindemann, and if you want to put Onitsuka in there, if you want to put Irie in there, whoever it is, 8-man tag match. I would throw those two versus Galeno Del Mal and Quiet Storm into the conversation just for the sake of doing something with Galeno Del Mal. I would throw those two versus either Voodoo Murderers or Hartley and Kotaro Suzuki, whoever is the tag team champion at the time. Let's give them a tag team championship match. And then I'm out of ideas because Soma Watanabe doesn't matter and Tetsuya Suzuki doesn't matter and Check Shimatani doesn't matter. So once you get through what is essentially a joyride, 6 months of dream matches, I just don't see a scenario in which they will have any more tread in this promotion. And that's not me picking on Gleet. That's not me picking on Kento and Takuma. Where's it at? For 2 years, they continue to do 700 fans in Korakuen. And the only time it differed was Ishida's debut, which was headlined by Jun Kasai. And Ishida's debut felt hot, and Jun Kasai always draws in Korakuen. They did just over 1,000 fans there, and they have done nothing before or after that has ever proven to me that this is any sort of viable wrestling entity without extreme cross-promotion assistance.
Yeah, it's something where after you get through those matches, I would be interested in seeing, just for my own edification, I kind of want to see Kento versus Minoru Tanaka.
I knew you were going to say that. No disrespect to Alan Forel. I love you, but I am over Minoru Tanaka. I don't like him in his prime.
He is so funny and great.
I don't even like prime Minoru Tanaka as much as basically all of my wrestling friends. I am good on old man Minoru Tanaka. I am not getting fooled by his name being on the match card anymore. It is not something that I'm buying into. It's a 3-star special. No, thank you.
So here's why I like Minoru Tanaka, other than like his early 2000s New Japan Junior run and everything around that. It was something that like you had these two kids come out here who look awful. And they're like cutting like this trash talk promo, and you see in the background Minoru Tanaka with like a hat on backwards, just like you could look in his eyes case, and there was one look in his eyes. You know what that was?
What was that?
I could take both of these kids at the same time.
I do believe that.
Yeah. So while this match is happening, Minoru Tanaka versus SB Kento, it could be Ledet UWF rules. I'm not complaining about this. I just think it'll be fun. I think we need to have Kaz Hayashi versus Takuma. I really do. And I'm being sincere about this. I think that Kaz Hayashi and Takuma, there's a lot of interesting wrinkles you could have there. Like, I don't think Kaz Hayashi is completely washed, but I think there's something there.
I would pee my pants from laughter if they put either of these guys in Gleet MMA.
Oh,
I would, God. I'd be inconsolable. I would be so annoying. I would not be able to stop. Oh, I hope that happens now. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but if they're going to, let's have it be in Gleet MMA. Oh my God, that'd be so funny.
Hideki Shex Sakin versus SB Kento. Five rounds. There we go.
It's like one of those weird pride fights where it's like it's like Kevin Randleman, and it's like, wait, how did the other guy get here? Is he trained at all? Is he qualified to do this?
And it's like, no, this is a former sumo wrestler that stayed in Japan. They needed the money. So it's just something where when you like to kind of like in a way, like summarizing my thoughts on SBK and Takuma to Glade, I ultimately feel like that there is a part of this where no matter what, I want their best conclusion, most fulfilling conclusion and whatnot. I just cannot see how that path is walked through this promotion.
So let me put a bow on it by this. I'm going to go back to the guy that I talked to from Drangate this week. And keep in mind, 1,025 fans is the Korakuen record. And we'll obviously have all eyes on that as Kento and Takuma come into the promotion next month. But as I was talking with a member of Drangate this past week, you know, they mentioned this to me. And this is where I think we're extremely fair about where we stand on Gleet. And unknowingly, I think this person, you know, kind of helped us make a point that balances things out, that makes things really fair. Where they said, and I'll read this mostly verbatim here, they said, Shima and those guys were here during peak years and could reasonably attract away fans. Ishida considerably less, but his debut did get a reaction. These were pandemic-era guys when popularity was at its lowest. Any DG fan that stuck around during that time isn't going to be pulled away by this. On the contrary, it is repulsive. Gleet fans are also tired of getting used DG goods when it's DG goods when it is the non-XDG guys that are popular there. And then they end with a point that I think is interesting. I think we can sort of segue into this. They say, that being said, them being totally unrecognizable is at least a minor indictment on DG popularity and awareness. Your thoughts on that quote?
Yeah, because I actually want to tie this into a thought I had about that eight-man. I came away from the eight-man thinking that they really went to T-Hawk and Hayato Tomura way too early. Like that. Now, it was something where I'm just like, damn, like you really could have had like an interesting program where T-Hawk now is just being this petulant, finally getting the throne after all these years. And like that's kind of how he's portraying himself as, that he's kind of over this now that he's finally champion. He's like this. And you could finally have Hayao Tomura, who like I know Case, like when you've like talked with people, he's always brought up as like the most popular non-GG guy there. I think that like they completely shot themselves in the foot now watching them in that eight-man tag. But it is something where like in a way this is a referendum on the Dragon system. And it's one that I think also shows a reality on the Japanese wrestling industry when you get outside of your conglomerate promotions, that it is going to be something where it seems like that although there are all these crossovers, you know, it's usually from one company to everyone else. It's not like when you see cross-pollination going between other promotions right now, that that's being seen as any sort of like balm for the industry. So it's something where I'm just like, I just kind of come away just sighing at this.
Yeah, it's like a gnat, you know, it's like a bug that you just want to swat away, this entire thing. And I want to make it clear what you just said there, very well said. And we've been on this since the start of the pandemic. I don't think there's a podcast that has covered the sad state of affairs that is the Japanese wrestling industry better than we have, because I think we're very realistic about it. I think we're very fair about it. And although we come across harsh on Gleet, I think we are incredibly fair about this promotion. In terms of Kento and Takuma showing up, it's just annoying. It's so disappointing. You know what I mean? It's like, I was thinking about them in the context, and I, you know, not that it matters, but I won't say the band, but there's a band that's like in the punk scene right now. And I just go, do you guys have no good role models? Do you guys have no one smart advising you? Why is every decision you make the opposite of the decision I would make? Why are you on this tour? Why are you with that label? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? It's like the more exposure this band gets, the less popular they get. In Kento and Takuma, it's just another one of those things where it's like, God, what a bummer. Like, they're going to just work, you know, Mr. Iguana and Nino Ambergesa on every small AAA show until the end of time, and then they're going to pivot to this, you know, and then, you know, what's next? Is it Ganbare Pro? Is that where they're going to set up shop after the Ledet money runs out? It's just, it's such a bummer that they're playing their cards the way they are, because, you know,
yeah,
again, like I said at the top of the segment, it was a soft breakup. It was a breakup, no doubt, but a soft breakup when Drangate let them go, and they are hot over this. You know, the other thing that I'll mention here, and this is where, if anybody has any intel on this, it would be greatly appreciated, because the person that I spoke to from Drangate highlighted the fact that at some point in the presentation of Kento and Takuma, the line "Note lo Peridos" was used. I cannot hear them say it. I cannot find it in writing. I do not know what it is, but I do know that this person from Drangate was hot about it, because that is what Takuma Nishikawa, who we'll talk about in just a second, what Nishikawa has been selling as his sort of catchphrase as he comes back from Japan. So not only is it a jump to a rival promotion, which, as Jay said on this podcast in July, Gleet partially exists in an effort to put Drangate out of business, but now as Drangate brings their prize people from Mexico back, Kento and Takuma are in that promotion, allegedly stealing his catchphrase. I cannot find any use of it in writing nor in the promo, but this person that I talked to specifically mentioned that, and they were hot about it.
So, Case, you know what "no te lo pierdas" means?
It's like, you like, don't miss it or something, right?
Yeah, it's a very common phrase.
Yeah, and that's what this person said. They go, "My Spanish is not strong enough to know if they were using it intentionally or if it was just a phrase, but ultimately, Kento and Takuma would be aware that this is what Nishikawa was using, and they're not going to give them the benefit of the doubt."
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Yeah, which from their position, I can see them coming at it like that. I guess like my takeaway, at least about that one line, is that like if you just search the phrase on Google, you'll see like countless advertising. It's a common phrase. But if it's something where like that it is so pointed for Nishikawa, I definitely see how the Dragon Gate side would be a little hot about that. So,
and if anybody knows where it was used, please point it out to me. I watched that promo so many times trying to find it. I watched the VTR. I didn't see it mentioned there. If anybody has, whether they said it in Japanese or in Spanish, I do not know. But if somebody could point that out to me, let me know, because this person was very hot over it, and I do not see it existing anywhere.
Yeah, I try to keep an ear out, and I didn't notice it. Well, you brought up Takuma Nishikawa, and as we've been talking about, essentially, since this guy came in our radar and was sent to Mexico, he's a big deal. And no better evidence of that is than the card for the Stormgate in Tokyo show, September 7th. The main event of the show is not Benkei versus Big Boss Shimizu and Shimizu's war against the Reiwa Generation leaders. The main event for Korakuen on September 7th is Madoka Kakuta, Yuki Yoshioka, Dragon Daya of D-Courage versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Takuma Nishikawa. Takuma Nishikawa's Japan debut match is headlining Korakuen Hall on September 9th.
So this feels massive. This feels like a huge deal, right?
Yep. This is, and with how everything was, I would have been stunned if it was going to be at worst. If this was below semi-main event, I would have been stunned. But then him being main eventing when, I mean, there's only one off the top of my head debut case that I know that Dragon Gate has had in the main event.
Which was that? I mean, I'm thinking my head immediately goes to Milano versus Rio Saito. That's sort of where I went, but that was the T2P landing show. That doesn't count. What are you thinking of?
Oh, Mochizuki Jr. That was the main event of that show.
You are right. The famed Torimon Reunion Volume 2 show that I still would like an oral history about someday.
I just want an oral history of the corking discussions. Was Daike somehow involved in that? Like, that's a wrinkle that we need to know in this oral history. He has to be involved now.
Let's pause for just a second and just remind people. June 2022, COVID still very much a thing in Japan. Torimon Reunion Show. Ultimo Dragon comes out and cuts a promo and says, I've been wrestling in Mexico and they cheer there. You can cheer on this show because it's a Torimon show. The Japanese police are contacted and they say, no, you cannot. And in fact, we might kick you out of Korakuen Hall as a result. And then Mochizuki, we find out in the span of an hour that Masaki Mochizuki has a son, that Masaki Mochizuki's son is debuting on this show. And then after the main event, he's like, my name is Ryoto Mochizuki. And Ultimo Dragon goes, no, it's not. It's Mochizuki Jr. And it stuck. Everybody was talking about Nozawa last year, and they were all idiots for it. We should have all been talking about how insane the Torimon show was.
Yeah, I know, man. I feel like that it's one of those things that just never ends. I mean, and he did because of Dory Funk Jr. Like, that was the reason. It wasn't like Dos Karras Jr. It wasn't like Hilo del Santo. It was because of Dory. What? And this is why, like, not to go AEW here, that they need to fill out a show on Sunday. Book Ultimo. I don't think he's working on Sunday. No, he's not working on Sunday. Book Ultimo.
Look, I'd be in favor of it. I would like to see Jericho versus Ultimo one more time.
Hey, yeah. And we know he'll pay for Separados with that. But
oh, that's a good point. Oh, my God. Tony going into the budget for Separados.
Luis Miguel is going to make his dollar. But it, getting back to Nishikawa, he is someone that, like, just entering the promotion, he's entering older than the traditional Dragon Gate rookie, as we've seen during the Future Project. He's, I believe, now 26, and he joined the promotion as an adult. And it is something where, from pretty much from the beginning, like the fact that they sent them to Torimon Casa, you could roll the footage back to when they announced it. They did that for a reason. The reason is going to happen at Korakuen. And I'm looking up and down this card case, and I just, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of screaming out to me about this Korakuen Hall show.
Let's stick on Nishikawa for just a second, because, you know, historically this is one of those deals there's very few comps for. You know, you can point to Mochizuki Jr. I think you can look at, you know, just for an idea of the sort of hype and fervor that you should expect, I think you can look at Shingo's debut, which was October 3rd, 2004. And that was Shingo in the semi-main event of a show at Hakata Star Lanes. It was Shima, Shingo, and Taru versus Shuji Kondo, Takuya Sugawara, and Brother Yoshi in the Rey de Parejas tournament match to crown what would have been the Triangle Gate champions at the time. So Shingo debuted in a semi-main event and was immediately a guy. I think you can look at the similarities to Nishikawa and Yuti, who debuted a decade ago, August 30th. You know, it'll be 10 years by the time most people hear this. August 30th, 2013, Yuti does a reverse landing, you know, debuted in Mexico and then comes back and debuts in Japan. That was match 5 on a Kobe Sambo Hall show. And I think we would all agree, just from the size and the hype around Nishikawa, that he has a higher ceiling than Yuti ever has. And then I also think you have to look at Strong Machine J's debut from 2019. That was match 3 on a Korakuen show. He won. He looked great. That's still one of my favorite debut matches in wrestling history. And the common thread with all of those guys, Shingo, UT, Strong Machine J, you want to throw Mochizuki Jr. in the mix too, I'd be more than happy to. It wasn't debut and then go back, back to match zero, match one, match two, work your way back up the card. These were guys that were established rather immediately. Now, they all had an ebb in the ebb and flow. They all went down at some point. Shingo to America, UT battling injuries, Strong Machine J battling injuries. But I think if Dragon Gate would have had it their way, it would have been a straight line of success all the way through. And they are once again putting Nishikawa in that position. I told everybody last year, everybody listening to this podcast knows, I said, don't forget about Takuma Nishikawa. This guy is going to be a big deal. I did not think he was going to be this big of a deal upon his debut. I was shocked when I saw this match announcement.
Yeah, and I'm glad. I was happy shocked because with how things were kind of shaping up around this, like, it's something coming out of Dangerous Gate and the shows since then that really felt like that we were that things were either, I don't want to say spinning wheels, because it's not like that, there's stuff that's happened on these shows, but it was something where you're just kind of waiting, looking ahead. And it was something that with the scheduling, it just was like, naturally you're like, okay, they don't really have a full loop right after this Tokyo Oda City Gymnasium show. So where are we going to look towards? Okay, we have the 7th, and if it wasn't going to be Benkei versus Big Boss Shimizu main eventing, which is what my expectation was, honestly, with how the storyline is. And when you look at how there's been no real direction for any of the title belts, save we will talk about the Triangle Gate in a little bit. We had something that was kind of going to happen. Of course, still, Luis Mesa Diamante has not returned. Now we have this. And it's something where cards on the table case, I kind of am coming into this show next week, not expecting, but when you've had the promotion be in kind of this situation where we're kind of discovering this new normal schedule, we've encountered a lull here, and Takuma Nishikawa returning or debuting into the main event does what you can do to fill that lull until the big triggers are being pulled. And for that reason, it makes sense to me that this is main eventing.
Do you think Nishikawa is bringing the artist formerly known as Diamante with him?
Funny you should mention that, case. Coming out of like this week, I really think that we might be seeing a shakeup. I think that I'm looking at this Korakuen card, and there's one match outside of the main event that I have my eyes like daggers on, wondering where they're going to go with that. I think might tip the hand on it if we're entering shuffle season, or if this is just going to be something where Nishikawa comes in. He's kind of unaffiliated until down the line. Whenever the shuffle happens, he does join a unit. I'm looking at this a match four case with a lot of interest.
Well, let's have this conversation. You know, I kind of had this in the back of my mind as something I wanted to ask you about, because there seems to be a growing talking point that Z-Bratz is either not a good heel unit, or Z-Bratz needs to get broken up. They've lost their mojo. They've lost their momentum. They've lost this. They've lost that. I remain in an uncomfortable position where I think every unit right now serves a purpose, and yet I think every unit could be improved upon. But both historically and the moment, I think very, very highly of Z-Bratz as a unit. Where are you at, and where is your mind going in relation to match four?
So where am I on in Z-Bratz? Z-Bratz is past 18 months, and that's usually when I expect to see some sort of change with a heel unit. Do I think Z-Bratz is going to disband or change into the next heel unit? Not sold on that yet. Do I think that there's going to be a massive shakeup within that unit? Yes. And primarily that is a point I've been bringing up ever since they were inaugurated last February. At its peak, it was a 6-member unit. You can't do a whole lot with a 6-person heel unit. You can do even less when you have, over time, lost SB Kento. You have had Diamante, who is now who were waiting on his return, but he's not going to return as a member of Z-Brats, and Shun's in America. You only have three people in the heel unit, and that just makes it very hard to have this heel unit around, especially when you have Kai, Hyo, and Ishin. Two guys there that are probably ready for a face turn, and then Ishin, who is in like his big, this is my first real singles run here. And I don't think how you could look at Z-Brats without thinking that something has to change with them with that.
Okay. Interesting. So is your angle here that Fuda is turning heel?
I think that.
And for those that don't know, it's Kondo Fuda and Yanagiuchi versus Kai, Hyo, and Ishin. That's the match we're talking about at the September 7th Corken Hall show.
Yes. Coming out of Nara specifically, I had this one note. There was a fun little number, Ryo Fuda versus Jackie Funky Kamei here, that if Fuda turns heel, I think Z-Brats is surviving. I think that they're just moving on to that. Not that I think that Fuda's any sort of like main event player, but when if you're turning a young guy heel, especially someone who is now like the most senior rookie, you're not going to do away with that unit within the next 3 months. Like that's just not how things operate. So it's something where he needs that step, and they're paying attention on Ryo Fuda when they have never put attention on Ryo Fuda. Part of that is due to his injury history. Part of that is a clogged roster. And it makes you wonder if it's time for him to get out of that rookie stage. And the most logical move for him is to turn heel and join Z-Brats.
Can I throw a counter at you?
Please do.
Fuda pins Ishin. They do a Brave Gate match at Gate of Origin in Fuda's hometown.
You know, that would be smart, too.
It's funny you went there, because my instinct was, oh, well, Fuda's getting a roll-up win, and then he's doing the Brave Gate match at his homecoming show in October. That's mid-October that Gate of Origin is this year. They could stretch that out for a month and do, you know, a lot. Honestly,
Future versus Z-Brats. You can do Future versus Z-Brats.
Yeah, because I don't remember when exactly Shun comes back. I'm assuming he's back by November, but I don't know if he's back by mid-October. I forget what his U.S. schedule is, but that's not a bad use of Z-Brats, is wrestle Daiki, wrestle Fuda, wrestle Nagano, wrestle Kato, wrestle Tanaka, maybe mix it up with M3K a little bit, because Junior, you know, is in the mix as well. I would like to see that for a month and a half. I think that'd be a very interesting use of Z-Brats. It would be better than just house shows of Kai, Hyo, and Ishin versus D Courage. That I'm not into. But if they go in Fuda versus Ishin's direction, I'd like to see that.
And when you look at the rotation coming up, Case, they have just KBS and Edeon 2 before the end of the month. So, they have one more in Kobe. If we're looking at September, September's actually a little quiet for Dragon Gate for once. So.
Good. That's okay. I don't need a busy September with the life I have going on. They can pump the brakes for just a second.
Nice you say that, Case, because October is going to be a motherfucker in response.
October is going to be a motherfucker.
Yeah, but so it's something where like you could easily like just like doing loop stuff, and it's something that would be good for. Like with the status of the future roster, now everyone is healthy. You're trying to get these guys nominally experienced so that they are able to step up. That's what you do in pro wrestling. Yeah, if you like see how they've used future over the last few months, they've needed to kind of do stuff with these guys for a while now that they're all healthy, and have a on a lighter month them versus Z-Brats, and you can constantly just change out the trio of future kids in support of Fuda. I think you could easily do that. And I think it's a better use of everyone's time than if you say like, oh, Z-Brats is going to be in the Triangle Gate determination match, you know, because they're not going to win that. They're not going to win. Like Z-Brats should not be involved in that.
In worst case scenario, you can throw Nishikawa in that mix too. If you need a quote star, whether he is or not, they're obviously going to position Nishikawa as a star off the bat. And you can do some Z-Brats versus Future with Nishikawa in there as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways I feel like you could do that, but it is something where we take Fuda's weekend. So Fuda got a pinfall in Kobe in an opener versus Kato and Tanaka, and then he had a really competitive performance against Jackie Funky Kamei the next day in Nara. It really, it feels like it's something that for someone like Fuda, who, I mean, Case, you've been his biggest defender, has just kind of clawed and kept his way on the roster. His time does that they wouldn't be having this guy get these wins unless they're doing something. Like, frankly, this is not one of those things. It's like, oh, so Fuda got a win. That's nice. With where this guy's position was on the roster, him getting these wins, it kind of was one of the bigger things that happened this weekend in Dragon Gate.
Can I throw a stat at you that blew my mind?
Please do.
So Fuda on the Kobe show, it was Fuda and Mochizuki versus Daiki and, oh no, I'm sorry. It was Fuda and Mochizuki versus Yoshiki Kato and Ryoya Tanaka. And I like, you know, Tanaka's an interesting rookie, just real quick, because I already derail my point. I think so often in Dragon Gate, these rookies come in, they have one really splashy performance that we can all kind of point to and go, see, that's the potential. Look at what this guy's going to be. Tanaka hasn't had that. He just gets slightly better every match he has, and it's really enjoyable watching him show to show.
Yeah, and it's something where with his, like, he was debuted on a clogged roster, frankly, of the style of wrestling that he wanted to be involved with. For both good and bad, that the kickboxer archetype kind of thinned out in Dragon Gate over the years, so he does feel very fresh in a way. Yes. that adds to it, and it's something where he at least on this Nara match, he does like this really brutal looking short range knee right before the finish that is just like right after he does his step up PK, they bounces off the ropes and uses it for leverage, and I'm like, this is someone that, like, if they let him kind of play in the ring, there's a lot of interesting things there, because he's doing something with like this pretty standard, and to be quite honest, like overseen kind of like style, that he's providing his own like little twist on it that I find really interesting, and it was providing a lot of life on these shows.
You're absolutely right in the case of Fuda there. So like I was saying, so Kobe, it's Mochi and Fuda versus Tanaka and Kato. I did not watch the show live. I talked to somebody right after the show ended who was watching it live, and they're like, dude, you got to go watch this opener. It's very good. I think you'll like the finish. And I did like the finish because Fuda pinned Tanaka. He got his first win. It was Fuda's 99th career match. The next day he wrestles Kamea Nara. It was the one match of the Nara show I was really looking forward to. I'm curious to see what this match looks like. And I watch it, and there are spots like the one you mentioned where Fuda looks really good. But my takeaway was like, God, you can just tell, like, this guy's not on the road with the roster every single day. He doesn't have that polish that somebody like a Kamei or a Minorita or a Jason Lee has. I looked it up. That was Fuda's 100th career match. That was Jackie Funky Kamei's 101st match this year. Just to show the level of disparity, the difference in the workload these guys have had. Kamei will be 4 years into his career this December. He wrestles like a 14-year veteran. Fuda will be 2 years deep into his career this November. He wrestles like a guy that's still trying to find footing 2 years into his career, the difference being the health and the workload, but the talent is absolutely there with Fuda.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of a fun thing to see Kamei play that role in a way, because it was a lot more grounded, that one, and it was a little bit of surprise there. It was the thing, at least on Nara, that kind of raised my eyebrow on a pretty just normal homecoming show.
Yes, yeah, that was, I mean, for me, that was the highlight of the Nara show. There was not a lot there, but an exciting weekend for Ryo Fuda. If you've never seen his debut match, maybe you started watching Dragon Gate last year and you don't know, you know, you might not be able to pick this guy out of a lineup, or you might think, well, who cares? Because every time I see him, he's in a quick match, he loses, whatever. Gate of Origin 2021, oddly enough, the same show that Takuma Fujiwara debuted on. Fuda wrestled Mochizuki in a singles match. And we all came away from that show not talking about Takuma Fujiwara. We came away from that show talking about the future of Rio Fuda and how Dragon Gate might have a superstar on their hands. Go back. I don't ever go back and listen to older episodes. We do. I might go back and listen to our Gate of Origin 2021 review just to hear again how hyped we were about Fuda. He got hurt. Fujiwara stole his thunder. Okuda choked him out in Korakuen Hall. And he's never been the same since. This was a very positive step, a good step in the right direction for a guy that I am still incredibly bullish on.
Yeah, and it instantly makes this before intermission trios match a lot more interesting that we get to see that. The other big event other than the new Strong Machine Army debuting for one night in Kobe was the big... kind of resolution with the Triangle Gate belts. As people followers promotion know, Minorita has been out injured with a knee injury over the last like week and a half, and since the Triangle Gate's kind of been in a question mark. During this this Kobe Sambo Hall show, after an intermission, Gold Class and Naruki Doi come out. They vacate the Triangle Gates, and it is announced that Minorita has a ruptured ACL and will be out for a considerable amount of time. It's one of those things that, like with ACL injuries, seeing that they said rupture and not a tear, maybe that's better, but we'll see about this. But now the Triangle Gates have been vacated. No indication whatsoever on what the direction will be to decide the next Triangle Gate champions.
I'm really curious to see what this does to the day-to-day of the promotion. You know, Minorita debuted in October of 2021. He was not only a mainstay in the promotion last year, but a real bright spot in the promotion. At one point, the only positive thing to say about Gold Class, by the time the calendar turned over to this year, not much of his persona, of his game, of his direction had changed. But I think there was now a universal respect where a lot of last year was, again, focused on, you know, hyping up Takuma Fujiwara and talking about Yoshiki Kato. And Minorita was the unsung hero of 2022 up until the very end of the year, where I think a lot of different tastemakers were like, hold on, we need to give this guy his roses, his gold rose, if you will. And by the start of this year, you know, I think we all are in agreement this is a very special wrestler, very talented wrestler, very charismatic wrestler, and a guy that... you know, just through hard work and persistence, just from being around with all of the changes that have taken place in Dragon Gate over the last few years, Minorita is one of those guys, much like a Jason, much like a Jackie, you know, much like a Yamato, much like a D-Courage. He feels like a day-to-day guy in this promotion. It would be weird to not see Minorita, to not see Minorita on some of these shows, because more often than not, he is, if not the highlight, one of the highlights. I'm very curious to see right now, with Ato working less and less days, Doi still doing the part-time schedule, Shun in America, and now Minorita on the shelf, if things start to feel thin again. You know, you made the point that luckily the future class, for the first time in a very long time, they all seem to be healthy. You have young guns that can fill out the bottom of the card again, but with no Shun, a headline star, and with no Minorita, a guy who is firmly entrenched in the mid-card in a very positive way, he feels like a fabric woven into this promotion. What do these shows start to look like? You know, I think this is a bigger loss than some people might initially realize, and it's now another unanswered question in Gold Class. What was the plan for Minoru, Minorita, and Doi with these belts? We will never know, and it makes the history of this unit all that much more intriguing.
And... also, the fact that this gets Gold Class back to three. Once again, Gold Class is back to three. And again, like I talked about Z-Brats, three people units are hard to kind of figure things out. Like the most you can really do other than splitting them all up is to have a trios match with them. And it's something where I think that all things being good for Minorita, everything kind of turns out the right way. He gets back. I think for him, this is the way to kind of off-ramp him away from the Minorita character in a way. Like, he's been now so far onboarded that, like, Minorita served its purpose, like, but we've seen how he's blossomed and grown past that he shows up back as Takumi Hayakawa, and we're just like, oh yeah, no, Hayakawa's back, all right, hell yeah. But you're absolutely right about
that's really funny you say that, because my thought was, even if there's a shakeup coming, they got to keep Gold Class now, because they've got to have Minorita come back at some point. So I don't.
Oh yeah,
it's a very fork in the road here. I think, you know, that might be a situation where for the Dragon Gate office, they can go, whew, pressure's off. We can end Gold Class, and we don't have to worry about Minorita's direction right now. Or they can go, well, we got to keep it going because he's got to come back at some point.
Oh, and we know how this promotion will keep zombie stables around much long past their expiration date, because someone has to return.
Like, see, Kagetora. See Gold Class 2022 before Ben K joined.
Right. I mean, high end. They were all waiting for Kagetora to come back, right?
Right.
It is something, though, that when we you look at like card construction and like the fabric of this, like, there's such a role that Minorita has like really embodied that, and it's like a hard one to describe. That like I know for Natural Vibes, we always talk about, well, you have Ginky and KZ there, so it's almost like understudying your future role there. But unbeknownst to like all of that planning for Jackie Funky Kamei, Minorita kind of became the cheerleader kind of character in the way that. I wonder if that means that just because of kind of like crowd appeal alone, is that going to be something where it's like, Ginky, you're moving back up the card again, buddy, because we need someone to start driving chants.
Yeah. I don't know where things shift into place here. I guess my question for you, kind of with that same thought in mind, is do you have a preference for where the Triangle Gate belts go from here? Is there a trio that you have in mind that you think, you know, if it's a 4-team tournament, if it's a 6-man tournament, if it's something really wacky, I hope these guys end up with the belts.
It's really at a place right now where you can't put really, you could do M3K, but you really don't want to do M3K because you have the Twin Gates and then the whatever resolution for Mochizuki Jr. with the book. Like, it just seems like that complicates things too much. Zebratz is going, I'm still fully the belief of the shakeup. You're not going to mess with them there. Then you're looking at Vibes again, and that again proves my point about 3-person units, because Vibes has 6 people that are all healthy that you're able to go like, okay, KZ, UT, Jason Lee. Okay, fine, go.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Right, because it's something that like all the other units, you can't put them on D-Courage really. So like, what do you do with it?
You know what they should do, and I'm about 80% serious?
What's up?
They should just do Minora, Hulk, and Doi. Just keep the belts on Gold Class. I thought they had a lot left in this reign. What? Like, I'm almost a little surprised they didn't just make up, we're doing Freebird rules, BB Hulk gets to defend the belts now. Like, why are they moving away from it? The other thought I had was, well, you know, the other most appealing trio to me was Yamato, Doi, and Dragon Kid, and then the belts are still on Doi. It just seems like this, you know, there are a lot of time where the Triangle Gate belts mean nothing, and this Triangle Gate reign with Minora, Minorita, and Doi was really intriguing and seemed like it might have gone somewhere, and now they're just up in the air again, and it's like, well, give the belt to Doi again. I don't, let him pick a trio. Just give the belts to Doi. I want to see him around more.
The problem is, if you let Doi pick his trio, then like somehow, then we are seeing Kenoka back in a Dragon Gate ring, you know? Like, we can't have that.
It's Doi and his drinking buddies.
I mean,
I have an idea.
the one last thing that I wanted to kind of touch on from this Kobe show. This was the summer festival that they had there. That it was something where a lot of kind of crowd appeals. We had a team of Karaoke Machine, Sachihoko Machine, and Super Strong Machine Ichikawa with Shogun HG Horiguchi. That was the vibe we really had there. But we had a surprise on this Kobe show for completely unannounced, as we had a special return during the fourth match, Susumu Mochizuki and Azushi Kanda, as Mr. Nakagawa made his temper. It's going to be a slow process, but Mr. Nakagawa made his return for the first time since April after departing the company for illness. And what I feel like was like universally like one of the more touching moments I think in a Dragon Gate ring in the last like few years was,
yes,
just the response from Kobe about Mr. Nakagawa coming out and everyone being overwhelmed. I mean, Mr. Nakagawa took a second to compose himself before getting into the ring, was like trying to hide his face during the opening of it because it looked like he had tears in his eyes from it. Just one of those like really nice kind of things. It's something where Nakagawa is not coming back full time, at least right now. It's a slow recovery process, small steps. And it was something that I saw his tweet about, like how it reminded him about how much fun pro wrestling is and how much he missed it and how much he's looking forward to the day that he's able to be back full time.
Yep. So like you said, you know, Nakagawa had to step away from the promotion earlier this year due to health reasons, came back here. And this was another, you know, it's funny that the show report I got from somebody was watch the opener, watch the main event. Also, you're going to love Susumu versus Kanda. And I was like, oh, maybe Kanda had another killer match. You know, this guy's had a great year. Maybe he just ripped out a great singles match out of nowhere. And then Nakagawa came out. And for those that don't know, he's a thin referee with wavy hair. And seemingly by all accounts, and I've never asked anybody this directly, I've just always gotten this impression from social media that he is probably the most liked member of the Dragon Gate roster. You know, when they tour, obviously, you know, Vibes hangs out with Vibes, Zebrats hangs out with Zebrats, Gold Class, etc. Everybody hangs out with Nakagawa. He's friends with Eita. He's friends with KZ. He's friends with the rest of Vibes. He seems to be very friendly with D-Courage, seems to be very friendly with Gold Class. It just seems like everybody is rooting for this guy. He is, to me, the greatest ref bump referee of all time. It was really sad to see him step away. But yes, everybody that I talked to about this show, you know, I love the main event. I want to talk about that in just a second. But everybody's been leading off with, hey, man, that Nakagawa segment, if you haven't seen it, go watch it, because it was very moving.
Yeah, it's something where Nakagawa's role, I know at one time, especially when it was that Ricochet and Matt Sydal came back, Nakagawa was kind of did the job that CM Punk wished someone did in London. He was the guy that I mean, there's no better way to do this. I remember like seeing like countless Instagram lives of like Ricochet coming back from an airport, hanging out with Mr. Nakagawa and just like cracking up. One other Nakagawa story. For a while, I know that he was like still around the dojo. This was before his illness, and he was gifted an N64 by someone on the roster, and he like showed off because he said he had a special ability or something like this where he was able to play Mario Kart with both hands and both feet, like four players.
Oh my God.
So like, I just think he's a wonderful person. It just seems like everyone's just like, oh, Mr. Nakagawa's back. And if you just like saw like the response on social media and you have not watched it, it's worth going back. It's probably, I would say, if we were going to do moments of the year, because I think this might be my Dragon Gate moment of the year so far.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, if you look at Jay's Twitter feed, DG_Jay, the sort of crying emoji face that he threw out there during the show was related to the return of Nakagawa, and then the follow-up tweet that said, you know, again, he's just here today for now, but as he continues his recovery, we will see him again. So in what has been, you know, a very challenging few years with the pandemic and some of the departures for Dragon Gate, don't let this get swept under the rug. This was a moral victory for the entire roster and a real feel-good moment.
Absolutely. And then kind of the last thing of the weekend was that main event match that we wanted to talk about. They did this Reiwa 6 versus DG Stars kind of match. Essentially, they put the three members of the old Big Six along with the biggest non-Big Six star of that generation, KZ. So it was Yamato, BB Hulk, and KZ, along with Naruki Doi, teaming up against the four Reiwa Big Six members who are available / weren't doing other things on the show, and Madoka Kakuta, Kota Minoura, Binkei, and Strong Machine J. Binkei got the win on KZ with the Masakari in 18 minutes.
So, you know, to kind of tie all of this together, you mentioned at the top that this was the Summer Festival show for this year. They brought that branding into play last year. They did it in Osaka, and they did Yamato, KZ, and Eita versus Yoshioka, Minoura, and Kakuta. So generational six-man match there. This year, they do the eight-man with Yamato, Hulk, Casey, and Doi versus Kakuta, Minoru, Ben, and Strong Machine J. And I thought this match kicked all sorts of ass. You know what I really liked here? And again, it goes back to the guy that I think should still be Triangle Gate champion. The Kakuta Doi stuff was really intriguing to me.
Well, Kakuta discovered that Doi was the Iron Man champion and decided he wanted that belt.
I don't blame him. I'd want it too.
But yeah, it was something where here you had that with Kakuta and Doi had awesome interactions. This felt like the moment, the real moment post Dangerous Gate, that the crowd seems still to be all in on Minoru being just full face, not doing any of the tweener gold class stuff as is. But it was something where the Kakuta Yamato portions towards the end just got very, very mean and spirited. Everything about this on a weekend where, hey, this was not Dragon Gate's weekend. It was not set up to be Dragon Gate's weekend, but we found a lot of interesting stuff here. This was like the one Dragon Gate match of the week I went in the notebook for. I was 4.25. It just was exceptional stuff.
You know, part of the reason I think the crowd was so into Minoru, and it really struck me watching this, was just how giving Yamato was to Minoru in this match. You know, specifically, there was a chop battle that Minoru very clearly came out ahead of, and that is not something that Yamato normally succeeds to. And it got me thinking, one, you know, just about, you know, I think Minoru's in a really good position there, but part of the reason I'm so intrigued about this year specifically of Yamato's career, and I don't think it'll happen this year, but he's been so protected and so wise in the way that he's been used, the way that he's lost, and the way that he's protected his image over the last 15 years at this point. When Yamato looks weak, when somebody comes across better than Yamato, it still comes across as a really big deal. And that's with, you know, dropping the Yoshioka Dreamgate match last year. That's with losing to Kai 2 years ago for the Dreamgate belt. It's not like Yamato never loses. But man, when he does, I struggle to think of guys in wrestling. I mean, there's a few out there. I want to put him at the top of the list. But Yamato losing has about as much impact as anybody in all of wrestling to me.
Yeah, it's something where no matter what, that how they positioned the Reiwa 6, no matter how no matter where Yamato's position is on the card, if he's like now not on the front lines or if he ever returns back to it, he's still the company ace. It is something where he, with the exception of perhaps Kento Miyahara, I can't think of one person to one promotion that within the context of the promotion are kind of treated with like that level of deference. And being able to do that for Minoru, who, this is something that for Minoru, I think that he really, like, if we when we get to a point we can reevaluate Minoru's like rise, like we're going to look at that Dangerous Gate match from 2 years ago and have some questions about it, about if that match was the time for Minoru or not. But I think it was something there that you saw with him and Yamato 2 years ago. You would not have this sort of interaction in that Dreamgate match, and seeing him kind of now make that step up has been it's been a long time coming, at least for the crowd and for Yamato to kind of receive this, because it did kind of feel like at a certain point, like I think if we forecast it out, if we're going to say which one is going to be the company guy, it's going to be Minoru. So I feel like that kind of positioning and doing that to Minoru and this kind of back and forth was really pointed to me.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I can speak to this as somebody who's quite literally in the position. It's very rewarding watching Minoru right now because I'm a fan of the guy. And for a very long time, I thought, well, boy, I'm going to cash in these chips early. This guy's a made man. He's a superstar in the wings. I can't wait to see what he does. And then it all went away. And we don't need to litigate the story of Minoru again. I'm sure we'll do it next week and then the week after that. But to see him now come around to the other side of it, to come out okay, to still have some of that success, it's very nice. You know, it's really exciting watching him right now and seeing him go nose-to-nose with Yamato and seeing Yamato give him the respect that maybe he doesn't deserve, but he certainly can be bettered by it, is very nice to see. It's a good time, once again, to be a fan of Coach Minoru.
Yeah, and it's definitely something where with everything else that's kind of happened within the promotion, it seems like it's taken. Where I don't feel like where we were talking about in Dangerous Gate, like, are we getting to the point where you kind of can't do that kind of loss anymore for Minoru? Like, are we getting to the point where there's actual damage here? It seems like this was that one loss that kind of pushes him, at least in the crowd's mind, to the point where now on, whenever you have him in that kind of position, you have to consider pulling the trigger.
Yeah, because he's taking his lumps. You know, there's no... It's not beginner's luck with him anymore, and it's not this, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura-esque, you know, super rookie, supernova sort of deal. No, he's a guy in the trenches. You know, he's a guy on the battlefield who has taken a few hits, he's hit a few targets, and he's in a good spot. You know, he feels like, for lack of a better term, he feels like one of the boys. Whereas last year, he kind of felt like a bubble boy, like he was getting special treatment, special protection. That is all gone now, and it's actually worked out better for him.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. And those were kind of the two shows we had this week in Nara and in Kobe as well. They are doing the loop this week. So I was spouting off case about Ultimo and Chris Jericho. Ultimo is booked on this weekend's loop.
Ah, what a bummer.
Yeah, I mean... You could either be in front of a hostile crowd in Chicago, or you could be in a six-man tag teaming with Dragon Kid Takashi Yoshida against Yamato, Genki Horiguchi, and Hoho Loom.
That is a no-bump match for Ultimo.
He's been working more and more Hoho. Have you noticed that?
Well, yeah, I would too. I would imagine Hoho works incredibly light and is a joy to be around. it'd be great.
No, I'd
also want to do that.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that is kind of the light way there, but it's one of those things where you're just like, oh, did not necessarily see Hoho and Ultimo being in the same ring with each other. That's not the world I thought we'd be in 3 years ago.
No, not at all. Real quick before we go, do you want to preview this September 7th Korakuen show?
I was actually filling time as I got that pulled up. All right.
Yes.
Let's go.
So quick programming note here. So obviously we're recording this August 29th. Most of you will hear this, you know, August 30th and beyond. This Korakuen show is Thursday, September 7th. As of right now, plan on the next Open the Voice Gate episode being recorded on Tuesday, September 12th. Unless something changes, we'll put it in the Voices of Wrestling Discord and on our Twitter account. No new episode next week. The next time you hear us, we will be reviewing this show.
Yep. So the show kicks off. It is on the 7th at 6:30 local time. That's 5:30 in the East, 2:30 in the West, 9:30 Greenwich Mean Time. Kicks off with KZ and Strong Machine J versus Kota Minora and BB Hulk. Match 2, Ultimo Dragon, Kagetora, Punch Tominaga versus UT, Jason Lee, and Jackie Funky Kamei. Three-way match, Masaki Mochizuki versus Don Fuji versus Konamao Ichikawa. The aforementioned match for Shuji Kondo, Ryu Fuda, Daiki Yanagiuchi versus Kai, Hyo, and Ishin. Match 5, Susumu Mochizuki, Yazushi Kanda, and Mochizuki Jr. versus Naruki Doi, Eita, and Takashi Yoshida. And then the Big Boss Shimizu versus Reiwa Generation Leader Series continues with its first non-tournament match, Benkei versus Big Bosh Shimizu. And then the main event, as we were talking about earlier on the show, Takuma Nishikawa Japan debut match, Yamato, Dragon Kid, Takuma Nishikawa versus Madoka Kakuta, Yuki Yoshioka, and Dragon Daya. Any last thoughts you had on the card we have for Korakuen?
Yeah, you know, just real quick, because I guess we didn't really talk about Shimizu versus Benkei this week. You know, we sort of alluded to the fact that they might do something like this, and that they did do something like this, which is seemingly Shimizu running through the Reiwa six guys he did not wrestle in King of Gate. I am really excited about this. You know, I think we all thought this would headline. It's their first singles match in 5 years. Last time they wrestled was on a Kobe Sambo Hall show in 2018, only one singles match before that in 2017 and KBS Hall. So a singles match we haven't seen a lot of, guys with a rich history. I think that match should be really excellent. And then the main event, you know, I have no idea what to expect. I have no idea what sort of finish to expect. I don't know what we're going to get from Nishikawa. You know, as I talked about when we reviewed Dangerous Gate and heard the news that he was coming back to Japan, He's somebody who, if you watch him, you know, for just a match or two, you can see there's a lot of talent there. But the talent that he was wrestling in Mexico was often very subpar, you know, not exactly D Courage. And so it was really hard to gauge sort of what his skill level is. And I still think it is to that degree, even if I watch his more recent matches in Mexico. I can't point to, at this time of recording, the best Nishikawa match from Mexico. I'm going to go through a few more, and eventually I'll try to highlight one in the Drangeat channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. It's like, hey, here's your preview for Nishikawa. Here's sort of what to expect. But, I mean, what a massive debut this is. Main event, Cork and Hall. It's not even one of those like Mochizuki Jr. where, you know, it was, hey, surprise, you know, X is Mochizuki Jr. He is headlining, and his name is on the marquee in his debut in Korakuen. I can't think of another time that that has happened, period. I'm sure it has. I'm sure there's been other wrestlers that have headlined their debut match in Korakuen specifically, but I can't think of them. So historically, this is a massive deal, and I'm really curious to see if he can rise to the occasion.
Yeah, this is just a fascinating Korakuen card. Just like how it's constructed, seeing where what we get from Takuma Nishikawa after all this time, like that easily is the highlight there. But you have like an intriguing, like the M3K versus I guess Freelance Army is something where, like, now that I'm thinking about this in the Triangle Gate situation, is there any way that they can get Doi, Eita, and Yoshida the belts? Because that might be a solve that helps out a lot of things.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. It's an intriguing card because you could almost, in a weird way, case, can we make this into a tournament for the Triangle Gate with like the most bizarre teams possible? It would have to be a three-way six-man to finish this off here, but you could very easily have a Triangle Gate team if we did this in this fashion, case. Ultimo Dragon, Kagetora, and Punch Tomonaga.
No.
Well, that was my idea, but Casey, okay, so you know, we've reached the point in the show where I'm trying to get Punch Tomonaga titles. We got to call it here.
No.
Anything that you wanted to hit on before we get out of here, bud?
No. We covered a lot today. I had a good time, and that's all I got.
Absolutely, and we'll be back in a couple weeks here talking about this Korakuen Hall show. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate and the Voices of Wrestling Discord and the Voices of and the Open the Voice Gate channel, as well as the Dragon Gate channel. Case is underscoring your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you in a few weeks. Take care, everyone.
Hola, hola. My name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Nos vemos por ahí.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.